Into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your App Store and download it now.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.
It's Thursday's football show. Nathan with you for the next hour. 53106 is the text number. We're going to do one final bit of reflection on what went on with the Republic of Ireland over the last week. Noel King will join us at about 9:30. The Burnley centre-half, Jimmy Dunn, is standing by to chat to us in just a moment. But just a couple of other bits and pieces to get through. And news just in from the FAI that Shamrock Rovers' next three fixtures, including tomorrow's game against Derry City, have all been postponed. As we heard earlier today, Aaron Green testing positive for COVID-19. Jack Byrne, it emerged, was the Republic of Ireland player who tested positive at the weekend. And a high number of close contacts have been identified within the Shamrock Rovers squad. So that means their upcoming games against Derry, Finn Harps and St Patrick's Athletic have all been postponed. It means that they're going to have to put the champagne on ice around Rovers for a little while before they can claim that league title. Bohemians, in the last few minutes as well, have also confirmed that a first team player has tested positive for COVID-19 and that another, deemed a close contact, is also self-isolating as a result. As it stands though, their game away to Dundalk tomorrow is set to go ahead. Both say they have made no request for the game to be rescheduled and are happy to proceed with the fixture as planned. So this is going to become part and parcel of the game. Premier League back at the weekend, the Merseyside Derby on Saturday morning, Manchester City and Arsenal on Saturday evening, and two live games as always on Off the Ball on Sunday. We're starting at 2 o'clock, Crystal Palace against Brighton with Kenny Cunningham and Stephen Doyle, and then myself and Brian Kerr will bring you Spurs against West Ham from 4:30. Our next guest needs to wait until Monday. It'll be an all St. Kevin's boys centre-back clash when West Brom go head-to-head with Burnley. Jimmy Dunn is on the line. Evening, Jimmy.
Good evening. Thanks for having me.
Yourself and Dara O'Shea potentially going head-to-head on Monday.
That would be brilliant to represent St. Kevin's in England. It would be amazing.
It is a remarkable production line. Jeff Hendrick, Robbie Brady, Jack Byrne, yeah. And that's just the current crop. It feels as though it's never ending. What age were you when you went into Kevin's first?
I was maybe 12 years old.
Right, so you're...
And there was an eliteness about... There was just some sort of eliteness about playing for St. Kevin's. I don't know what it is because it wasn't a local team as such. I went from playing with my local team, Rock Celtic, to St. Kevin's, and it really felt like a big move at the time, and the coaching was so elite and the players were like the best from in around Dublin. So it was great.
So you were playing with your local club up in Louth?
Yeah, I was playing with my local club and going from there, which was brilliant for me. I was just playing with my mates and enjoying my football. But going from there to St. Kevin's boys was different. We had like all the best players from around the country, particularly in around Dublin. And it was really competitive for the age. We wanted to win everything. We wanted to beat Malahide and beat Cherry Orchard. It was really important to us to beat all these teams.
So did you get a sense, even at that age, like you're not even a teenager, you're heading down to St. Kevin's boys, that actually not everybody gets this chance, that I'm at a very high level, and if I make a go of this, if it's the right attitude, that there's some big opportunities here for me?
Yeah, at the time, that was the opportunity. Like it couldn't get bigger. It couldn't get bigger at that age than playing for Kevin's boys, because there was everything that came with, like, who was going to get picked for the DDSL.
Did you play Kennedy Cup?
Played Kennedy Cup, yeah. And there was also the Cashin Cup. There was a few important cups to win. Then there was just winning the All Ireland with St. Kevin's, which was huge. And winning the league with St. Kevin's was really important at that age. I kind of look back and laugh now, but we took it really, really seriously. And our coaching was intense and we trained really, really hard at that age. And some of the players were really good. And then, you said a few names there over the years that went abroad and have done really well in England that have been at St. Kevin's.
It's interesting you talk about the importance of actually winning something with the club, because a team like St. Kevin's now, you look at them as that conveyor belt, if it's all about getting players across to England. I know it's changed now in the link up with the League of Ireland teams, but that it is to get players to play at the highest elite level possible. You almost forget that there's that Dublin rivalry, that all these big clubs, you want to be winning, you want to be winning trophies and medals at 14, 15. Like, when you're talking to your coaches and people around the club at that stage, and your family are involved, is it focus on this, focus on winning these matches, focus on lifting these trophies? Are you already talking about what the next step is and what you need to do in terms of your development to actually be able to make it somewhere else?
Yeah, I never thought about my development as a player at that age. I never thought about what the really big next step would be. Obviously, you have clubs and scouts coming to games, and that was really exciting, and couldn't you? But I never really thought about it too much. It was more important to me to beat Malahide in the cup final, or you know, it was like going crumbling away. It was what a hard game that was. Like all these. You know what I mean? And that was just really important at the time. I know that when it started, maybe when I got to the age of 13 and all these possibilities, you're then old enough to go and trial at clubs and stuff. Then it started getting a little bit more complicated. I ended up having to go back to my local club, Rock Celtic, to enable me the opportunity to go and trial more. And it was weighing up what's more important, playing these games for St. Kevin's or going on trial, because I know it wasn't always pleasing for the club if I would miss a game to go on trial with a club. But when I was playing with my local team, Rock Celtic, it was, you know, just, you know, do what's best for the kids, do go where he needs to go. So after a year or two at St. Kevin's, I ended up having to go back to Rock Celtic to enable me to do that more.
Where'd you go on trials?
Oh, as a kid, we used to go away. There's a few scouts. I think my first trial was at Man United. I found it really tough. And then from there, every couple of weeks, I tried at Aston Villa and Chelsea and Newcastle. And I spent a little spell maybe with Dara at West Brom and went to a few tournaments at them. And that's what you could do. That's what you could do, because I wasn't full-time with a team.
Yeah.
I didn't, you know, and loads of us did that. All the boys did that. Loads of the lads was just from Kevin's. You'd go and trial one place one week and somewhere else the next week, and you'd see who liked you and what you liked, and that's kind of what we used to do. It was more difficult than St. Kevin's boys because they were really competitive, you know. But that's where you would get spotted playing for St. Kevin's in these games. That's where the scouts would go to watch you. So that was massive for me. That's probably where these scouts saw me play at that young age.
What was it you found about that first trial at United that was so tough?
Yeah, it was a completely different world. Like a young, a complete coachy from County Louth. Like
what age are you?
I'm 20. I'm 22
when you went to United, what age were you?
Well, I went to my first trial. I was 13.
Wow, right.
And
you getting on the plane by yourself, or is someone going over with you?
I think the first time I went over, I went with the scout Walter Murphy, who was brilliant, and maybe a few other boys. And then it got to the stage where maybe I'd go every school break. Then when I got a bit older, or certainly through most of the summer holidays, I got to the stage where I was missing a lot of school, and I was going over on trial maybe every couple of weeks. And it got a bit once I settled in, but at the start it was a complete shock to the system. First thing was playing football at that intensity every day. It was like I played football every day anyway, but to enjoy it, this was like intense training every day, and I was absolutely shattered at that age. And then there was the whole feeling of like, wow, these boys are amazing. Like, you know, back home I thought I was a superstar. Over here it's different.
Yeah,
you know, there's lads coming on trial from Brazil and Spain, and it's like, this is crazy.
Can you remember anyone who was there?
Well, my youth team then, I ended up having it really lucky. My youth team turned into a really successful one, the group of lads I was with. So obviously Marcus Rash was doing amazing. Scotty McTominay's doing amazing. You a few other boys as well, who have, like Tim Fosu-Mensah's playing at Man United, Axel Tanzebi's playing at Man United. Dean Henderson's obviously pushing now for that first spot as well. So I had a really tough group, a really competitive group. And at the time, I felt real frustrating. How the lads are, everyone's really, really good. Like, this is tough. Looking back at it now, it was obviously brilliant for me, because I was mixing with some really, really good players. and learning so much. So it was brilliant.
What was Rashford like as a 15, 16-year-old, both in terms of ability, but as a personality? Because we've seen what he's done off the pitch over the last 6 months, and he's an MBE now. He's such a leader in terms of world football, for what footballers can be away from the game itself. Yeah. What are your memories of him when he was a kid?
Yes, what he's done now is amazing. Obviously, you could never predict that he'd go and do such a row of things off the pitch as he is. But one thing I always knew about him was he would always take responsibility. So I can see that I can understand how he feels the need, that he's seen something that needs fixed, and he's taken upon himself to go and fix it. Because he did that on the pitch. You know, we were maybe 13, 14 years old. If we were losing, Marcus could win the game by himself. And he would really, he would take that pressure amongst himself. As a lad, just the nicest, kind of sweetest kid ever. Never really got carried away. But at the same time, knew how good he was. Full of confidence, but the nicest kid ever. But yeah, he should be incredibly proud of what he's gone and done, both on and off the pitch now. But I'm lucky enough to be surrounded by some of these guys, and obviously it's brushed off on me, hopefully, in some way or another.
When his chance came up as a 17-year-old, he obviously took it with both hands straight away and made this brilliant burst into life at Old Trafford with goals in the Europa League, yeah, and followed it up in the league. In terms of his talent at that young age, like, did he have it all at a very young age? Like, was it all there? Was it just a matter of him seeing it through to the first team?
I thought so, yeah. I thought he was incredibly talented. Like, his skills and his technique is something that I don't think I've ever seen, like amazing. But at the same time, there's loads of youngsters like that who are incredibly talented at that age. And it either goes to your head, or you're getting fed the wrong ideas, or there's a million reasons why you can't go and push on and keep doing it. Marcus never kind of fell off the horse. He kept going. As good as he was, he worked incredibly hard. Knew what he needed to improve on, but kept getting better at what he was good at. Always scored goals, and when he got his opportunity for the first team, he scored two in his debut, and then he just kicked on, kept pushing, and I had that relentlessness. He never really took his foot off the gas, and you know, that's so important.
Yeah, how long were you in the academy then at United for?
So I spent 4 years as a Man United player.
And
went straight to Burnley from there.
At what stage do you decide you need to leave? Like, at what stage? Because I'm sure during those 4 years, you're dreaming of what happens to Marcus Rashford, which is you make the instant impact. Yeah. You've made your way to the Premier League now, but I suppose when you're 14, 15, you're thinking, I can get right in there. Maybe I'll get a chance. Maybe I'll get an injury. At what stage does something happen where you think, you know what, actually, as difficult as the decision to make, Manchester United maybe isn't the best place for my development?
Yeah, well, look, at that age, there was no place I wanted to be other than there. Like, that was the top for me, and I was chuffed. Like, I didn't really ever want to go anywhere else. Like, I had a roller coaster of emotions as a young kid there. Like, I spent maybe like 13 months out with hip operations, and like struggled to find my feet again, and then I grew huge amounts in no time, and like I was all over the place, and then I had to try and I spent a lot of the time, I was 17, 18 year olds, trying to get games for under 16s because I just needed to find my feet again. And then I thought I got back on the horse, and I was playing games for the 18s. It was going really well, and by the end of my scholarship, I had a year left at Man United, and I had a conversation with Nicky Butt, and he said, you know, you can stay and you can try and fight and maybe turn things around in the last year of your deal, but we highly recommend that you go. This opportunity at Burnley has come for you, and it's hard for lads to get released and find clubs again that quickly. And we highly recommend that you go and you take this opportunity at Burnley. And at the time, it broke my heart. I was like, I want to be my United player. Like, this is like where I want to be. I want to stay and fight for my last year. But having conversations with the people that were closest to me, my agents are brilliant for me at the time. We all came to agreement that this was best, this was best for me, and that my development would be better elsewhere, and especially at Burnley, with maybe the type of player I could have become and what they were going to coach me and turn me into. I didn't see it at the time, but now I'm just so grateful that I was able to walk into a club like that who are developing me the way they are now.
Yeah, and as
so
you talk
I feel
about,
lucky.
Yeah, the players who were at, in that academy, the homegrown talent like Marcus Rashford, but also players coming from every part of the world to make it at a young age at United is practically impossible. It's a miracle anybody comes through at this stage. And you don't have to look too far. Somebody like Robbie Brady, who probably faced a similar decision at a very similar age. I don't know if you had a chat with him around the time as to what the best route was.
Yeah, it does. It gets to a stage where Robbie was... I remember Robbie at that age, like when he was 18, 19, he was, oh my God, he was incredible. And I definitely would have thought, you know, if I was giving advice to Rob back then, I said, Rob, stick around, you'll get more of a chance. You're like incredible or whatever. But he obviously similar thought that, no, my development might be better elsewhere and I might be able to push on and go further and get past some of these players that I'm competing with now if I go somewhere else and maybe take a step back in order to take two steps forward. So that's what he did. That's what loads of lads have had to do. Some players it affects them more than others, and then I've tried to make it work for me and learn as much as I can and keep pushing.
And you got yourself back all the way to the top of the ladder. You make your Premier League debut last month. You score on your Premier League debut, but again, it's not straightforward. You go out on loan. You're in Barrow in non-league. You're in Accrington Stanley in League Two. You go up to Scotland with Hearts. You're at Sunderland and Fleetwood in the First Division. Again, all of this is happening at a very young age. Leaving United is that a moment, do you think, in 20 years' time you're still going to look back on and actually, you know, everything changed for me there in a good way? Did you have to grow up very quickly when you left United? Like, going to Barrow National League as a 17-year-old, I'd say, is pretty tough.
Going from Man United, where, my kit smelled like roses, to 18 months later, playing for Barrow, where it's like you wash your own kit and who do you think you are, was probably the biggest shock in my life at that stage. But the only way I'd give myself credit for it is I felt like I really took it on. I felt like I understood my situation. I had a year at Burnley in the under-23s before I went out on loan. So when I got released from my United, I spent a year at Burnley's under-23s and then went on this embarked on all these journeys on my loans. I feel like that season I had at Burnley, my first season, I probably grew and developed more than I did in the previous 5 or 6 years anyway, because I learned so much and it really built me and enabled me to go and have all these loans in the man's game, just probably because of the attitude that's at Burnley, the real hard work and desire and the ethics that are at the club. I needed all that. I needed that. When I first came in, I was probably thought it was too big for my boots. There was loads of little things that people needed to help me with, loads of little bits of my game, taking the ball down in the wrong areas, all these little things that might have been acceptable at Man United, but in kind of, not in the real world, but in a lot of levels of football aren't good enough. And Burnley, just I developed so much at Burnley. I got coached really well, and from there, going and playing in the Conference, where everything's so tough, so aggressive, and me being quite slight and skinny, that was an amazing experience. And from there, I tried to build as much as I could.
The loan at Fleetwood broke down. Joey Barton didn't seem particularly happy with something. I don't know if have you spoken about this, about what happened? It all seemed a bit mysterious.
I've not spoken publicly about it. I'm sure I will one day. It's quite bizarre, and for another word, I wouldn't really know how to explain it. But it's
get it off your chest now, Jimmy.
Yeah, I know. I would love to. We came to a. I did get it. What can I say and get away with it? I got accused of something that was relatively bizarre, and we kind of will never be able to put our finger on. And I will come out and speak about it one day, and it's really not a big deal. But at the time, we just kind of felt, you know, maybe it's better I'm not here at all, and I go back and continue my development at Burnley. And it was coming up to the January window anyway. It wasn't a huge falling out, but you know, Joey's Joey. I'm not the first guy to fall out with Joey Barton, and won't be the last.
No, and so, certainly, but because it's Joey Barton, it becomes big news, and somebody falling out with Joey Barton is big news. And is any part of you again concerned that, wow, suddenly I'm in the paper, suddenly my name has been thrown about for a falling out, and I'm going back to Burnley, and Sean Dyche is reading this, and is he going to be questioning my character? Is he going to be asking what happened here? Is this a guy I want around the place? Was that going through your head at all?
Like, I've been at Burnley like for 4 or 5 years. Burnley know me better than anybody, and I've had five or six loans prior to my loan at Fleetwood. I know one thing: if you speak to any of my previous managers, that if they question anything about me, it won't be my character or my work ethic. You know, and Burnley know that. Burnley are aware of that, and Burnley are the exact same. The reward I've been given by the gaffer now is through my hard work. And so one thing I know that they've never questioned is my intentions and my attitude. So thankful for that. So you know, that like I say, I won't be there. I won't be the last one to fall out with Joey. And I'd be more concerned if it was a falling out with another manager who wouldn't usually fall out with people. But I mean, this is just the game. I had to be mature enough to get on with it and take it on the chin and just concentrate my footy again.
Did you know when you were coming back to Burnley that was it? You were back for the long haul? Like, maybe you're not back for the long haul. Maybe there's more plans for loan spells. But did you think, actually, no, I'm done with the nomadic life, I need to settle down?
Yeah, there was a part of me coming there. I mean, loans are brilliant to develop. And I had loads of them. I had loads of good ones and some not so good ones. But loans are going to be like that. I mean, you can't expect a player for five clubs or six clubs in three seasons and for it to go well over time, you know, moving house and moving around the country, going from living in Preston to living in Edinburgh to living in Newcastle to, you know, it is tough. It's brilliant. It's so exciting, but there are going to be challenges, and you are going to come across people that you're going to have to learn how to deal with. I've had experience now. I've dealt with some people, and I've matured from it and learned from it. I'm going to take it into my next experience. But
do you need to remind yourself of that? Like, when you are out playing in non-league or League Two, and you're not only you're away from home, you've also in some ways have had the dream dashed of the straightforward route through at Old Trafford. Of, you know what, this is still living a life that so many people would work so hard for. I just need to stick at it and keep my head down.
Yeah, there is that. Some players are absolutely fair play to them. They go to a big academy, a big club, and they do really well, and they get their opportunity, and they play in the first team at 17 or 18, and they ride off into the sunset, and it's brilliant. And that was obviously what you think is going to happen when you come over at that age. No one ever told me that there was a possibility of it going a complete other way, and I might have to forge a career for myself in a completely different manner. But once it started happening and I came to terms with it, I was just really determined to try and make it work, and I'm obviously still continuing to try and do that. Like, I've only played a couple of games now, there's a lot of work to do, and I've got loads I really want to achieve, but I'm enjoying the journey.
I'm sure you wouldn't change going to Manchester United, but if you're signed by Manchester United, you obviously would have had plenty of options elsewhere. And like Manchester United, I'd imagine as a young player in an academy, they want you to play a certain way. Like, they're preparing you to play in a team that generally is going to dominate possession. Probably when you're playing underage games, you're playing a team that's the best team out there. Like, that's not Barrow. That's not Burnley either. It's a totally different type of defending. Football. How do you go through that process of literally changing the footballer you are?
Yeah, like the things I was learning and getting taught at Man United were completely different to what I was learning and getting taught at Burnley. And then there's finding the balance. I mean, everyone's all for a good footballer and a good footballing centre back. But you know, I think looking at the Premier League now, even people really need good defenders in their team that are going to try and keep clean sheets. And that's something that before I'd become a really good footballing centre half that I really want to master. I want to master defending and master both boxes and become really good at that first and foremost. And then be able to develop the footballing side of things, which I am. And, you know, at Man United, that was probably primarily what we were trying to develop. At Burnley, the other way around, we were trying to develop our defensive skills, which I feel is more important for now anyway.
You got a good baptism of fire as well. You got the goal against Leicester, but your first two games, you're going up against probably the two hottest strikers in the Premier League, the two hottest out-and-out strikers in the Premier League, and Jamie Vardy and Danny Ings. What's Vardy like to play against?
yeah, like I had to learn quickly. Like, they're two strikers in the sense that you don't want to give them space in behind. The first goal we conceded against Leicester, Vardy got a bit of space in behind, and the first goal we conceded against Southampton was they got a little bit of space in behind. So that's one thing that is completely different than I know now in the Premier League to other leagues, where I could maybe be a bit more aggressive and press in on whoever's floating in the number 10 kind of slot a bit more, because it has to be a really, really good pass to be able to slide one right down the side there, perfectly weighted for them to get in. But obviously at this level, that's easy for them. So that's something I've just had to learn. Now, two games in, that's probably the biggest thing I've taken from it, is to not give up the space in behind me.
Mm. Is Vardy a talker during the game?
I think he just is playing football on the park with his mates.
Right.
I don't think he thinks any different of it than that.
You can get a sense he's rubbing his hands with glee when he sees a 22-year-old making his debut.
Yeah, look, I'm sure like these guys are ruthless. They want to score as many goals as possible. So I'm sure when he sees that there's a newcomer involved who hasn't done it before, he wants to capitalise on it. So at least he didn't score in that game. I know a couple of other guys did, but at least he kept him quiet for that one.
Were you nervous?
I played in the Sheffield United game a couple of days before, and from there the games came quite quick. There was like two games a week, Sheffield United, Leicester, Millwall and Southampton. And it was like that 2 weeks, just, I can't believe how fast it went. I don't really think I was that nervous. Maybe before the Sheffield United game, because that was my debut. I just wanted to go out super aggressive and do what I do. But after that, I felt like I probably wasn't thinking at all. I just went in and tried to enjoy the games. Do the best I can for the team.
I was delighted to see you get that game against Leicester, because I was watching at the end of last season, game after game, you're on the bench, and Sean Dyche, as we know, is not a man for sentiment, and I was looking at that last game of the season thinking, I think he'd been on the bench 9 games straight. There's nothing to play for. So he's definitely going to throw him on for 10 minutes. Give the kid a go. Who knows what's going to happen in the rest of his career. Give him that Premier League experience. And no, nothing. Like, are you in his ear going, come on boss, please? Or do you just know that Sean Dyche is not the type of character who's for turning, who makes changes for the sake of making changes?
Absolutely, I would not be in the gaffers here. No, it's a thing. Like, there's a real compliment in that as well, because I mean the gaffer's not really just going to hand out debuts. So the most positive way I can look at it is to get a debut under the gaffer, I'm really, really proud of, because it must have been earned. Like I said, that game, there's, I think Norwich had 9 men and we were 2-0 up and the season had finished and there was nothing to play for. But he obviously didn't feel the need just to hand out a debut. It's not that simple to play at this level. During lockdown and after lockdown and after I came back from Fleetwood, I walked my socks off. I tried to train my hardest and help the team out as much as possible. And then the opportunity arose where Tarky wasn't ready yet and Ben weren't ready yet. And then I got my opportunity, which I'm delighted and really grateful for.
You mentioned leaving United being a pretty slight young lad, unsurprisingly. Like, Tarkowski and me are two players who they're constantly been linked with other clubs because they're really good quality footballing centre-backs. But they're two big, tough men as well. Over the lockdown and coming back to Burnley, like, are you physically, do you feel you're there now, even though you still are, 22 at this stage, to be a Premier League centre-back? Do you feel physically you're ready for that?
Yeah, I think physically was a massive thing for me. There was, like, I'm 22 now, but I've probably only just finishing growing. There's a lot of changes going on in your body, you know, when you're still growing. And I was always kind of late developing that way. So only now at my age have I kind of started beginning to fill out a little bit, and it's taken a lot of work in the gym to try and coordinate myself and improving my agility to be able to keep up with guys who are probably a lot smaller than me but rapid and have really quick feet. So it's taken a lot of work. I've done a lot of work at home with Graham Byrne at Sports Ireland. We do a lot of work stuff for that when I go home in the off season, and then work on my upper body as much as I can. But probably only now do I feel really physically ready to compete with some of, like, I can't imagine what playing against Andy Carroll or someone like that. Like, that must be like, I'm going to
go up high with the elbows first, I suspect, is what you need to be doing.
That would be tough. That would be really tough. But yeah, I do feel now that I'm kind of growing into my body and I'm becoming more ready.
Like, there's been so many goals at the start of the season, and I do look at it like football. I know there's many different reasons, but attacking play and the speed of the Premier League is just insane right now. Unless you're probably at games all the time, you're not fully appreciating just how technically gifted these attacking players are. That one of the reasons for more goals as well is that, like, I know defenders are improving, but forward play seems to have improved exponentially over the last couple of years. That it's just so quick that it's practically impossible for centre halves some of the time.
Oh yeah, like some of the goals in the Leicester game, I genuinely was scratching my head. I didn't actually know really how we could have stopped one or two of them. There's usually always like someone that's put a foot wrong in some places. Like I watched the goal we conceded against Southampton a couple of times, and it's literally, I spoke with Longy straight after the game, and it was literally, if I had taken a step backwards instead of the step forwards, the goal probably wouldn't have happened. Like, and it's that detail that I've had to try and learn, and then again when they get in front of the goal, the quality is so good that they'll punish you. Whereas in League One, a lot of the time you could maybe get away with a couple of things, the keeper would save it, or they'd put the shot wide or whatever. At this level, they don't. They put a top corner, like, so.
You mentioned Kevin Long there. You were playing together an All Irish centre half pairing. Like, the one thing we know with Sean Dyche is he doesn't make changes, and there was speculation James Tarkowski may leave. He didn't. He's going to be back to full fitness. Ben Mee is back to full fitness. I always go back to a story. Stephen Ward was doing commentary with us one Christmas in 2015. Mm-hmm. Was at Burnley. Thought he might have to go out on loan. Player gets injured. I think he played every game for the next 2.5 years. And then he gets injured and he's out and he doesn't get back in. When you're in, with Sean Dyche, like, is there? What are your feelings for the season? Are you happy getting your bits and pieces of game time and been around that Premier League match day experience? Or do you feel you need to be out getting games again, maybe a championship level? What's your thoughts for what happened this season?
Yeah, like, look, I've opted to go out and play for the last two or three seasons, and it's been probably a good decision for me, because you don't want to sit around like I did then the last season and never play, as good as the experience is. And I do need to play loads of football, but I always kind of say to myself, you're not going to play Premier League if you're not at a Premier League club and you're not in around it. You know, if you're not there, you're definitely not going to get the chance. So I do feel like it comes to a stage where you are going to have to sit tight and really give playing in the Premier League a go. Maybe if it gets to the stage where it's, you know, it's ridiculous and the opportunity isn't coming, and you might feel as though, okay, I might need to go and play somewhere here for a while and get back up and going again. But for now, it's the start of the season. It's a long season. I'm delighted to have been given an opportunity, and I'm just gonna push for more and wait for more, and hopefully get another chance and take it again in the next few months.
What was the last week like, seeing Kevin Long called up, seeing Darragh Shea called into the squad? Were you waiting by the phone? Were you thinking there might be a senior call up, because you've been around the senior squad before?
To be honest, yeah, I didn't really think about it. Like, I try not to compare myself to others too much. Like, obviously, Longy is a really experienced centre-back now. He's been at Burnley for like 10 years, and he's been in loads of Ireland squads. And obviously, like, Dara, like, I know Dara. Dara's absolutely flying, doing absolutely brilliant. I thought he did brilliant in his debut the other night. And to be honest, I'm delighted for these guys. I do know, like, the international thing does take care of itself. If I keep development at my club, and doing as well as I can here, then hopefully that opportunity will come up and I'll grab it with both hands. For now, definitely all I need to concentrate on is my club football.
Stephen Kenny obviously had huge success in your hometown. Were you around Dundalk during the Kenny era? Do you know him at all?
I actually, the only reason why I know Stephen Kenny is because a couple of years ago, I think it was the summer I got released from Man United, I wanted to try and keep fit, and I knew Dundalk were doing really well at the time, and I got Stephen Kenny's number off somebody, and I asked him, would he mind if I came in and trained with Dundalk and kept myself fit and kept myself training, and he was brilliant. He was said, absolutely, yeah, we'd love to have you in. I trained all the guys, you know, and I spoke to him. I learned loads. The lads were like really flying, really fit at the time. And then they went and won the league, and I went to Burnley that summer, and that's how I know. So I know Stephen, and obviously the whole town's is still delighted with how well that era went and how important it is for the town. It's a real soccer town. It's a real footy town. So it was massive for them. But yeah, that's the only reason I know Stephen, and I know how much he loves the youth and the connection he has with them. So it's great to see the younger lads stepping up as well.
Yeah. So Monday night then, West Brom against Burnley. Hopefully both yourself and Darrow share play. You're a year older than Darrow, so you didn't play together when you were at Kevin's.
I'm sure we played together at some stage. But yeah, I am older. I'm a year older than Darrow, so we probably didn't at Kevin's.
Yeah, but you know each other quite well by the sounds of it.
I know Darrow. We've, you know, football's a small world. We've played with each other and against each other in trials and stuff like that. So yeah. Well, I'll have to catch up with him on Monday.
Yeah, Jimmy, it's been great to talk to you. It sounds like you're loving life at the moment, as much as anyone can.
Working hard, you know. Yeah, well, there's frustrations, but yeah, we crack on.
Yeah, Jimmy, great stuff. Well, best of luck with the rest of the season. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Thanks a million. Bye bye.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power, fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
Jimmy Dunne, what an impressive young man he is. 22 years of age, just made his Premier League debut. And really interesting story from his time at Manchester United with Marcus Rashford and any amount of underage talent. Dean Henderson was there as well. Left United, goes to Burnley, goes out on loan, goes all over England and finally gets his reward. And no doubt, I think, is going to be part of Ireland's squads to come. Enda Call from Team 33 is with us as well. Evening, Enda.
Nathan, what's the crack?
The man who booked Jimmy Dunne, and I said... It's Ireland talk. It's the day after the match. We got to talk Ireland. He said, Jimmy Dunne. You got to talk to Jimmy Dunne. You got that one right.
Listen, it's we spoke to a couple of these young Irish players coming through, you know, Jason Malumbi, Darrow O'Shea, and now Jimmy Dunne. And what I've noticed from most of them is that they are incredibly confident. And do you know what? That's a great thing to see. Because for too long, we've been thinking that, you know, maybe Ireland players have been put down by so many managers that their confidence is just shot. But we're seeing now that there's a generation of young Irish people that are full of confidence in their own ability, and they're showing it now in the Premier League, which is, it's going to bode well for Stephen Kenny, even though the last week hasn't been great.
No, and it's funny because you can get access quite often to the younger players, the under 21 players, with a bit more ease than the established internationals, and quite often through the years you go, do I want to talk? Because mostly 20, 21 year olds, let's be honest, don't have a huge amount to say for themselves. But we've now spoken, as you say, to Malumbi, to Jason Knight, to Conor Masterson, to Adam Ida. And all of these players are eloquent. They have a lot to say for themselves. They're able to talk about their journey. They're able to talk about football in a really smart, insightful way. And as talented as they are as well, you just feel that it's going to be a good camp over the coming years.
It's going to be brilliant. And I suppose one thing you mentioned there is do young people often, they don't have a lot to say about themselves. But I suppose the likes of Jimmy Dunne there, it shows that he's currently breaking into the Burnley side. So he might not be as media, as media trained as some of the older players. So like if you're talking to a player who's been playing the Premier League for 10, 13 years, they have done every interview, they've done the live chat, they've done all this, they know all the tricks of the trade, and they don't want to give anything away. So they often give out really boring interviews. So when you sit down and chat to someone like Jimmy Dunne, who's so open with his journey and talking about his journey through the lower leagues and then right up to Mark and Jamie Vardy, that's what people want to hear ultimately. And ultimately it makes them more open to the public as well, makes them more relatable. And I think when they get onto the pitch, people are less likely to judge them as harshly the more they know them. And I suppose that's what's missing in Premier League football right now. The connection between the fans and the players has got to the extent where people don't really know the players anymore, whereas the younger Irish players, people are starting to get to know them and they really like them. And they really like the football they want to play as well. So it's a bright future for Irish football on that front as well.
Our listeners, I'm sure, all know Enda from Fridays, where he's Mr. Friday here on Off the Ball from Team 33 every Friday night at 9 o'clock, the Paddy Power half hour. He also has a little side gig going on as well. What are you calling it these days?
It's been through a multiple number of names so far, but Calling It with Enda Call is
Calling
the current,
It with Enda Call. So you can get this on YouTube. He just goes off, he does it by himself, puts all his best stuff there, his little rants and his raves, won't give it to the Off the Ball audience, and that's just fine. But give us a little insight then into what Enda has made. Call it, Enda, on what you made of Ireland over the past week.
I thought they've been pretty good. I mean, anybody who's looked at that and come out with the opinion that Ireland aren't on the right track or aren't trying to do something a little bit different doesn't really understand football, to the extent where they can't see the fact that Ireland are, you know, they're trying to pass it out from the back when ultimately under previous regimes they wouldn't have. And there was one point in the game where the Finland players were on the break and the Irish defence were all getting back, and every single one of the four defenders were running at the exact same pace in the exact same line. There is shape to this team now. They have a real outlook in what they want to do. Yes, we do need to start breaking down teams more, and I kind of get what John Giles was saying, that we need to actually have cause and effect. I think that the midfielders at the minute aren't brave enough on the ball. They're not turning, they're getting the ball and then they're passing it back. They're not being inventive enough, but I do think that will come. And the results, I do think, will follow down, maybe not down the next couple of months, but down the next couple of years. Irish football will benefit from having Stephen Kenny at the helm. And even just down through the different sectors in Irish football, where we're no longer training our under 13s or under 15s or under 16s to kick the ball long. We're training them to play out from the back. And there will be a progression of players over the next couple of years that will be tuned to play this football, as opposed to trying to train the likes of Shane Duffy, who didn't really play it, trying to change the way that Jeff Hendrick uses the ball. You know, we're trying to change players who are already established pros, whereas in a couple of years' time, every player that we have in that team will be trained to play that type of football. So I think it's going to be a long road, but it will be worth doing.
Yeah, it's interesting. What John was saying was maybe not that far off in some ways from what Vinnie Perth was saying yesterday, that Ireland need that creative number 10. And it's a sad irony that the one time we have a manager who's probably crying out for that player doesn't have one, when we've had so many of down over the last 10, 15 years who could play in that position who we didn't use. And it's hard to see, even coming through, and things can change quickly, a player can emerge quite quickly, that we don't have as good as I think Jeff Hendrick has actually played in that role. He's not that creator who's going to pick out the pass in behind at the right time. So look, there's probably going to be some more tough days to come for Stephen Kenny. I would agree with you, but listen, here, we're Kenny sympathisers, as I've been told.
Well, that's it. We're just, we've gone from being biased against the League of Ireland to be biased towards it. But I don't know if you saw James Rodriguez chatting during the week. There was a clip going around of him talking about how the number 10 has actually disappeared from world football, and how in the 80s and early 90s it was the most popular position, and now there are no number 10s and no manager likes under 10s, I think, or number 10, sorry. So it was almost like a veiled dig at Zinedine Zidane, the fact that he wouldn't play him in his actual position. But it was an interesting point. The current systems that are being played in football, they're really tuned towards the fast, aggressive, athletic players out in the wing that can burst into the box, and it's really tuned towards 11 players and playing in one system rather than one creative player. But really what Ireland do need is that number 10 that can get in the ball, turn and play a pass. What Ireland actually reminded me of against Wales on Sunday was almost like the United team under Louis van Gaal, where they were getting the ball, they were passing across the defence, and then it would get to the midfield and the midfielders wouldn't be brave enough to take the ball on the turn, burst forward a couple of yards and then play the pass through. They were just kind of getting the ball, they were facing away from the goal and they were playing it back to the defender, and it was just sort of, it was possession for the sake of possession, kind of like what John Giles was saying. It just needs that little bit more progression, but I do think that will come.
Yeah, let's hope it ends better than Louis van Gaal at Manchester United. Just a couple of news lines to bring you then. You mentioned the League of Ireland. The breaking story tonight is that three Shamrock Rovers games have been called off, their next three matches, because there's been a COVID outbreak within the squad. There's two players confirmed. Jack Byrne was one of them. He missed the Ireland game because of that. And Aaron Green as well. And lot of that squad have been classified as close contacts, so their next three games have been called off. A Bohemians player has also tested positive for COVID, but they are going to go ahead, it seems, with their game against Dundalk tomorrow night. So we'll keep you up to date on that on otbsports.com. Premier League is back this weekend, and quite a weekend. We've got a Merseyside derby where Everton are top of the league going against the Liverpool side, who just conceded 7 goals. That is the first game of the weekend, and that is early on Saturday. We've Manchester City against Arsenal as well at 5:30. All of that, as always, on football on a Saturday afternoon here on Off the Ball. And then our two live commentaries on Sunday, Crystal Palace against Brighton from 2:00, and then Spurs against West Ham from 4:30. And a quick what you got in Team 33 tomorrow?
Tomorrow we have, I'm chatting to Darren O'Dea, head of the first Old Firm, or the Glasgow Derby as it's now been called. Celtic fans don't like calling it the Old Firm anymore, apparently. So I'm chatting to Darren O'Dea about what it's like to actually play in one of those games. And Kieran Bradley will be speaking to the lads from the Socially Distanced Sports Bar, a podcast that kind of sprang up in the middle of this. So that's all coming up at 9:00 tomorrow night.
Calling it once again, good
calling
man.
It with End of Call. Smash that subscribe button, Nathan. Oh, that's no, what I'm calling to all the Off the Ball. Smash the subscribe button.
Ads, get rid of them.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See Dunlewy.net.
You're welcome back to Thursday's football show. Nathan with you this evening, and I'm joined on the line by the former Republic of Ireland under 21 manager and, of course, former manager of the Republic of Ireland senior team on a couple of occasions as well. Noel King is with us this evening. Evening, Noel.
Good evening. JP, how you doing?
Yeah, very well. It's been a typical 24 hours of reaction, I guess, to the Republic of Ireland. Extremes on both sides. Those pro Stephen Kenny feeling that there's really positive signs in terms of the style of football, the way the squad is progressing, the young players coming through. And on the other side, they're looking at the results and no goals in 4 games, no victories in his 5 matches so far. And is there actually anything to be positive about? Where do you sit in it all?
I sit there just supporting Ireland, to be honest. I want the Irish team to do well. If Stephen's in charge, I want him to do well. Whoever's in charge, I'm just like an ordinary fan. You know, Stephen has come into the job with big expectations. A lot of them put on himself maybe at times by saying he was going to change the game and change the way we play. And he's gone about that. He's been true to his word. And I would love nothing better than him to be able to outplay teams. But at the moment, it's very, very difficult for him. You've just said it, no goals, no wins. And it makes for a precious situation and makes for difficult times for him.
That expectation that he put on himself, and you're right, like Stephen Kenny has done many interviews when he was in charge of Dundalk and he was analysing Ireland games, that he felt that we had the players, that this talk that was often there of we don't have the players to play a certain way was simply untrue, and that we needed to rethink how we looked at Irish football. Have you seen signs over these 4 or 5 games that actually what he believes these players can do, he's actually been able to achieve?
It's too early to say something like that, but it's not like it's a new invention the way he's trying to play. To be fair to the FAI, it's going back to 2008, I think it was, when they brought Wim Kuurman from Holland to try and restructure the underage, and they followed it up with another Dutch man coming in, the Rude Doctor, and they've given something like 8 to 10 years where the young players and the underage players are playing the typical continental possession game, and this is happening. This is not something new. We've all played it. During my time in Rovers as coach, as manager, we would have all played possession football and passed teams to death going through with it. The problem is when you come and you play it at the senior international level and you go and play against the top teams in the world, it's very, very difficult to outplay them. Virtually impossible, I'd say. At the moment, we're not playing in the top seeded. Mm. We're playing well down in the rankings, and you would have felt we could probably do a little bit better than we currently are doing. And I think that's a fair comment. I don't think that's picking a side.
It sounds strange. I don't know if you feel you can separate the performance and the result, because Ireland were creating chances out there. Somebody just has to take one at some stage. But in terms of what Ireland have been doing tactically, and then as you say, at underage, and these players have come through a system, particularly the 3-4 teenagers and 20, 21-year-olds have come through last night as well. Like, are you seeing something very different to a year ago under Mick McCarthy to 2 years ago under Martin O'Neill?
Yeah, the amazing thing, if you look about it and you're thinking about a body like FAI Association restructuring its systems and its way of playing, And then you bring, say, 8 years of work. And then you look at the senior team and you see the senior team has Martin O'Neill playing a more direct game because he understands. Mick McCarthy playing a more direct game because he understands that they'll probably get a better result out of it coming the way they play. And then you see where we are now. And it is a change from the international team, but it's not a change. And these players are very capable of playing systems. They're very capable of adapting. I think in the last game, but the game before that, we had a squad with 15 players linked to Premier League teams. It doesn't mean they're automatically great players by that, but it does mean they should be adaptable and can play this system. It's not a new system. It's just a way of playing with the ball. And we need to be doing it better.
Why weren't they doing it better then over the last couple of games? What were the issues?
Are you talking about the COVID issues? Are you talking about everything we say
over the last week in the three matches, we need to remember that like Stephen Kenny probably went into last night's game without a dozen players between a mixture of injuries and COVID issues, and listen, it did overshadow everything. But in terms of the performance, maybe last night in particular, as to a style of play that didn't fully come off then, what could have changed? What could have they done differently
I think it started off initially with the lads keeping the ball and being encouraged to keep the ball, which is fine, and that's an excellent way of playing. But sometimes the opposition, and in all of these games there have been large spells where the opposition are quite prepared to let you play and to let you have the ball deep in your own half or coming to the halfway line without putting any pressure on you. So it's in these situations that it's playing without pressure on you is easy to keep possession. Where it really matters is when you start getting into the opposition's half, when you start getting into the penalty area of the opponents, and you see people having the courage to show for the ball, people being able to give small little deft passes, supporting, creating angles, going down the side of a defender, making runs in behind defenders. All this sort of stuff needs to come in. Now, that's as you're developing a new team, that's virtually impossible to do on 3 days preparation for international football. That's a very, very difficult thing to do. That's not to say they haven't made progress. I would expect them to make progress, but given the opposition that we've played against, I would have expected us to be scoring goals and winning some of them games, in all honesty. And I think Stephen came out this morning and said that himself. I think he was saying it wasn't acceptable.
What you're talking about there inside the final third and dangerous possession then for an attacking team, did Ireland not have quite a few spells of that over the last few games, or actually they did try to do things slightly differently, that it wasn't just pinging crosses into the area the whole time, that there were nice little passages of play that did create opportunities? In fact, even if you look, two of the best chances were two of the fullbacks, Matt Doherty and Enda Stevens, right inside the penalty area, something we probably didn't see too often of previously.
No, I did say that there was improvement and signs of improvement. But for me, Finland were over the two games, Finland were far better at playing possession football where it's most difficult. That's in the box and the outside the box, areas where are crowded by opponents and crowded by your own players at times. And I don't think we got crosses, we got flick-ons, we got opportunities from that sort of stuff rather than creating and carving chances out in the areas I'm talking about. But that will come, I'd imagine. But I just feel, you know, it's winning football. It's always about winning, and it's very difficult to take that we've had five games and not had a win.
Mm. The lack of goals is a huge concern, and it's not just over the last four or five games. This is going on for the last, well, really since Robbie Keane retired. But looking at the last 3 years, I think now it's 19 competitive games, and one forward has scored a goal in those 19 competitive games. What can you do differently? Because you think back of the three games, like Conor Harran has to take that chance over in Slovakia. Shane Long has to take the chance on Wednesday. There's two or three again hitting the woodwork, wonder saves from the keeper last night. Is it just a little bit of luck, as Daryl Horgan said, bouncing in off someone's arse at some stage and you take from there? Or do we need to approach it differently?
Well, no, you can still play it the same way. But if you're the manager there and you're at a club, you're able to apply pressure to players. You're able to have more time to work with them, to work on things. If they don't perform, you're able to pick players and leave them out. But international football is different. They're coming from different setups. They're coming from different systems. And it's very much short term. Over this particular period, we've had three matches in something like 8 days, which doesn't allow much time for training or sessions or anything like that. So it is very difficult, but it hasn't worked for us. And I'd love to be able to, you know, as you go through the country in my career, the amount of people that you can blame for not scoring and not scoring and not scoring, and you know you've done a good game, or you've had more possession, or been the better team, and you lose. Well, the reality is you're judged on losing. And that's the way the game is. You're judged on losing. And unfortunately, the amount of potential income that we've lost with losing the Slovakia match, if we were to get relegated out of this group again, my God, the amount of money that we would lose there again would be significant. And it wouldn't help us develop the way we want to develop.
Mm. You sound quite downbeat then in terms of the financial side of things and the resources that might be needed to get Ireland competing with that top tier over the next few years.
I'm downbeat. I mean, the FAI, in fairness, over the last while, hasn't been a very upbeat association. Mm. The team would normally give us a little bit of vigour, but it's a little bit of bite. I don't want to say put them under pressure, because Stephen has been putting up the opponents under pressure and doing quite well in that phase of the game. But it's a difficult time for Ireland. And unfortunately, without a win, you have to be downbeat, don't you?
Stephen Kenny has said quite often when he's been discussing tactics and style of play that, you know, he is pragmatic. He's not afraid to change things. He's not set to one style, whether it at some stage means changing to three at the back, changing his tactical setup completely. When you look at the 4-2-3-1 of the last few games, is that a style you feel that is working? Or when you look at the individuals, provided there's no COVID issues and injuries, hey, if you were setting up that team, how would you approach these matches with the players that are there?
I've managed these teams. I've played 4-2-3-1. As I said to you, it's a system that's out there. The harsh reality is the expectations of Ireland is massively, massively over-hyped. We're a small little country. We don't have a proper full-time professional league. The facilities in Ireland are atrocious around the League of Ireland. And we have ambitions of English rather than ambitions from Ireland. That's just the way we are. We're the poor relation of sport, League of Ireland Soccer, the GAA, the rugby. They must be delighted at the moment. Some, not them all, but one or two of them would be delighted that we're struggling. And it's I just find it sad.
But our players, as you said, are playing in England in the Premier League. There's a good chunk of that squad, particularly at the first few weeks of this season, who are playing well in the Premier League, in, as some would argue, the best league in the world. So other countries of similar size, like Iceland are often thrown out there, have achieved and have overachieved. So should we not be actually thinking like that, that yes, there's any amount of issues and God knows where we are going with the FAI and the debt and that side of it. But
I think in the past we have overachieved, but wasn't playing in a possession game. With Jack Charlton, we overachieved. Mick McCarthy qualifying for Euro finals. Martin O'Neill qualifying likewise. That was an overachievement for me.
Is qualifying for the Euros overachieving? Like 24 teams out of 48, essentially?
Well, that's are we going to do it this time?
Well, obviously we're not now, but that's why I'm wondering that when we're talking about Stephen Kenny, like Mick McCarthy was the one who had the team for that qualifying campaign and didn't finish in the top two.
He wasn't allowed to finish the job.
But the playoff wasn't as a result of anything Mick McCarthy had done. It was a convoluted system of Nations League games that we, no matter what happened, we were going to end up in it.
It doesn't make any difference. You're given a job, no one cares. Personally, I don't. All I want to see is Ireland qualifying for the finals. That's all. And I think that's the vast majority of people. If they can get there and play a beautiful style of possession football, a dynamic game with great individuals who can score goals, which you have to be able to score goals, obviously, that would make it better. But at the moment, we're being let down by bad finishing, and that's. Who takes the brunt for that?
Well, the manager is, and that's always going to be the case, I guess, in professional football. I just wonder, though, are people ready for a change? And your sense from talking to people around the country of what they want from the national team, because for the last decade, it has been moments. It has been Robbie Brady and Lille, Shane Long against Germany, sort of smash and grab, stealing a win here and there, doing just about enough to qualify. And going to the Aviva Stadium for matches hasn't been...
In the last minute.
Hmm?
Shane Duffy equalised.
Exactly.
That's a similar thing.
But that actually, people want a more entertaining brand of football. They want to go to Lansdowne Road and watch a team who aren't giving up possession to the opposition, who do get on the ball, who do create chances, and obviously you want the wins, but that they do want something slightly different than what's gone before, probably since Trapattoni has come in. They want a more exciting brand of football.
Maybe you talk about Trapattoni. He gave up on it. He started to play the long ball himself because he felt that we didn't have the players capable of playing that. Now, that's from a man who understands football. He's been hugely successful in international football and club football. And his verdict was, good luck to you, Martin O'Neill. I hope you can do better, but you haven't a chance. I think he said something like that. And that's probably the reality of where we are. And you look at your smaller countries, Iceland do fantastically well. Cyprus are always difficult. Ireland, I would say, are in that category that we always get decent results and do well without ever having real ambitions of winning a European championship.
But surely we're past that we don't have the players, no? Like, you've taken charge, what is it? It's probably 7-8 years ago now since you had those couple of games in charge of the team. When you spent time with that group of players on the training ground, like, were they not technically very strong players?
Sorry, go on.
Were they not technically good players who could play a possession style of football, create chances and score goals at the end of that?
Well, at the moment, it's a phase, isn't it? Where he's getting them to believe that he can pass out, don't have to kick the ball away, just try and play out, even when you're under pressure. And this is the real tests. When you are under pressure, can you receive the ball? Not only can you receive it, I want to receive it, but can you use it? And can you use it cleverly? And that's the mark of being successful. But finishing is part and parcel of that. And it's how you create them chances. And you've said you've gone to various different players throughout the team, and that one of them has been able to convert that. I don't know why. I'm sure Stephen doesn't know why. But I know that if he was at a club, he'd probably be working on finishing, intricate build-up, that sort of stuff to try and improve the situation.
You obviously have seen both sides of this and, you know, very involved in the underage system for so long and the type of football that you're trying when you have under 15, under 16, under 21 squads and what you're trying to teach them to the sheer pressure that comes with the senior gig. And you learned that the harsh way when you're thrown in against Germany as a caretaker manager. You lose and the criticism is insane and it's very, very intense. So there is a big difference. But in terms of the trying to progress while being senior team manager, like, does Stephen Kenny now, next month when there's two more Nations League games and a friendly thrown in there, and there may be the final time he gets the players ahead of World Cup qualifiers, does he just need to stop thinking about performance and is it just all about result?
But it's always about results. It's always about results. He's not going to be judged on chances created or missed. He's going to be judged on can he get us to the finals of Nations. Could he win the group? Can he get us out of that? No. Could he win the Slovakia match? No. So the next thing is, people will, and this is the way it works, people in the association will understand that to qualify for the World Cup would be worth a fortune to them, absolute fortune. And then they're able to develop the game in the way they want to. But if we're not looking like we're going to qualify, if our seeding goes down, and I believe we're just at the moment, we're in 20th position in seeds, according to extra.ie, that's where we are. And if we lose the next two games, it's quite possible we could be a third seed. And with only one team winning each group and two runners up in the whole of the groupings, it's going to be hugely, hugely difficult for Stephen to get through.
Yeah, it is. It's such a huge task to qualify for a World Cup in comparison to a European Championship, where it is that little bit more straightforward. Just in terms of where Irish football is going at the moment, then over the next few years, like, Stephen Kenny doesn't just have a role, it seems, as senior team manager. He's an influence on everything that's coming underneath. When you think back to your 21's time in charge, do you wish you had that system where there was a more straightforward connection with the senior team managers, with Trapattoni or Martin O'Neill, or do you feel you had that? Like, did they have the interest they should have had in the underage system?
Yeah, they always had. If you go back through the time, they would have taken players from me, just not as many as Stephen has taken in this particular instance, but they would have taken players from me on a regular basis. Two or three players come in, goalkeeper just come in and sit on the bench. But that's the job of the 21s. The best job in the country is the one Stephen has. It's the number one, it's the most important, and it's the one that he's had a magnificent chance to get, and I would hope that he would succeed in it, but it's going to be very, very difficult, because if he doesn't get a second seed in the World Cup, the people who employ him will be looking and saying, is this the man that can take us to the finals of the World Cup? And that they will have to put their hands in their heart, look at the performances that he's given, not in club football, in international football, look at the results that are there and make a judgment. Yes, keep going, we'll back you in the group, or no, we will go and pick somebody else to perform for us in the World Cup qualifiers.
One of the issues that he has is that he has a good group of players that are that sort of 28 on group. I think you look at that sort of class of 92, as you might call them, of Jeff Hendrick and Robbie Brady, And then there's a big gap to the under-21s who are coming through. And he's spoken at times of that lost generation of five or six years where players didn't come through. You would have seen a lot of that generation at 21s level. Why didn't that generation come through? What was wrong in the system that?
Well, I was with that generation with Brady and Duffy and Henrik, and we were so close to qualifying, it was beyond belief. In actual fact, did well, performed well. Got that when we started, we were bottom seed 10 years before it started, and then by the end of that, we had moved their way up, which helped Stephen, which has helped everybody because the seedings grew. But I don't know what it is, but you get a certain time. And this looks like a time where it's coming. They're still only 19, 20. You get a certain time where a group of players just come together, a golden era, if you like to call it, or silver era, depending on what country you are, maybe even bronze, which would be great. But they just happen, and it comes together, and then you need somebody to gel them, pull them together, and make it happen. And that's what happens in football regularly. The unfortunate thing is that we're a country. It's international football. You can't sign players. Someone purely you can't just go out and replace them. You have to play with the hand of cards you're dealt. And that's the most difficult part. You look at Germany. Germany have a couple of... They'd have four teams who beat us. And that's the exaggeration. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean that the size of the country, the quality of their leagues, the number of clubs they have playing football, the number of players that they have is absolutely incredible. And go on.
Just on the lack of goals then... Noel, because you look at the strikers that are available at the moment, and like Dave McGoldrick was brilliant over in Slovakia, but he doesn't score a huge amount of goals for Sheffield United. His role is to create and to open up opportunities. Likewise, Shane Long's record at club level hasn't exactly set the world alight over the last few years. Aaron Connolly is slowly getting into it. Richard Dunn was on last night making the point that Robbie Keane is there. He's still around. He's not involved in the management setup, but the amount of goals he scored, the knowledge he has, surely he could bring something to us. Do you look at those players and think actually getting the right person in could coach them to take those chances? Or actually, as you say, is the time so little that you're just relying on somebody coming in who will have that talent naturally?
Yeah, you're probably right in the last thing you say, that the talent is naturally there. Could Robbie Keane help? You'd imagine he could. But I could never see Stephen going back now and asking Robbie to join him, given that he didn't take him in at the start. So I don't see that as a runner. I see it as a red herring. And it's not going to happen. I'd be shocked if it happened. Right. But is he capable of doing it? Well, we probably have had no better striker than Robbie, had we?
No, that's for sure. Just before we finish up, Noel, to finish on a positive, who were the players over the 2-3 games who stood out, who... impressed to put their hands up for that World Cup campaign coming up next year, who've stepped in and taken their chance?
I know most of them of the older 20. Oh, anybody over 22, I probably know, and I've had. The standout for me has been Malumbi. I've known about him for a number of years. I've been told loads. The underage managers love him. Great attitude. I see him now. I've seen him a little bit in action, but I've seen him in action at the highest level, and you'd have to say he's going to be around for a while. That's for sure.
Noel, great stuff. Thanks a lot for taking the call.
All right. Thanks a million. You're welcome. See ya.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. Fueling the mischief in the beautiful game. Gamble responsibly. See dunlewy.net.